Let's say you've just written the great American novel, as I recently did. Assuming you publish it this year, as I plan to, and then you tragically expire, as I don't plan to, your masterpiece will still be protected from copyright infringement until 2082. Today, the 14-year term our founding fathers originally established has been extended to the author's lifetime plus 70 years. Why? Because in 1998, lobbyists for some beloved vermin convinced Congress to, yet again, extend the copyright term. Paul Heald, a professor of law at the University of Illinois, has evidence that the long copyright term brought about by Mickey and Minnie silences a whole lot of other voices. Heald looked at 2,500 newly printed fiction books selected at random from Amazon's warehouses and found that while there are a great number of books available that were published prior to 1923 and are now in the public domain, 1998's copyright extension resulted in a sharp drop in availability for books published after 1923. In fact, going back to most of the 20th century, surprisingly few titles are available.
Only 25 of those 2,500 books were published during the decade of the 1950s. 75 of those books were actually published during the decade of the 1850s. There's about 4.5 times more books actually published in the 1950s than there were in the 1850s. But it holds in general that these older works are significantly more available and that we have as many books from 1900 to 1910, new editions of them available on Amazon as you do books from the year 2000 to the year 2010.
It's very easy to see why Disney doesn't want Mickey Mouse in the public domain because it's still ringing the cash register. But how do we quantify what is lost when material doesn't go into the public domain?
Well, that's a good question. As far as the cost issue goes, my wife's a choir director, and she sees it quite starkly in the prices of sheet music that she has to buy for the choir. So if it's a public domain piece, she can photocopy at about, you know, 3 or 4 cents a page, and it's more like 50 cents to a dollar a page if she's having to buy the sheet music. So I mean, you can sometimes put a dollar figure, and it's very hard to put a dollar figure on, for example, situations like the famous PBS documentary Eyes on the Prize, which came out in the early 90s, I think the most highly regarded documentary of the civil rights era. It's very expensive to make a documentary, right? You have to get all sorts of rights in photographs and film footage, and especially in this case, music, because, you know, there really is a soundtrack that we recognize that sort of goes with the civil rights movement. And it was very expensive for them to get any sort of long-lasting rights to the music. That caused the documentary basically to disappear. PBS couldn't show it on TV because there were no licenses. And this tremendously important work essentially was lost due to the fact that the copyright owners were unwilling to license the background music at a reasonable cost.
When Disney and other copyright holders were lobbying the Congress for the extension of the copyright protections that they enjoyed, they brought with them a fairly long list of really frightening sounding consequences if copyright should fall precipitously into the public domain. Can you tell me what can go wrong when rights holders lose those rights prematurely?
Economists siding with the publishing industry came up with a number of arguments, one of which is that works would be tarnished and debased by inappropriate uses, and the examples almost always involve pornography. What would happen if we had a Superman porn movie or a Mickey Mouse porn movie? The second is that works might be overused, not that they would be used inappropriately, but just used too much. The song would be played too much in the background of advertising. We'd become sick of the song and no longer want to consume it. It would be worn out. The third argument, and the one that Congress seemed most interested in and found most plausible, is really quite exactly the opposite, and that is that without owners, works, in fact, would be less available, and that we should continue to extend copyright terms to ensure that there are owners out there to make sure that the public continues to encounter and see these works.
But the Amazon research that we were discussing earlier seems to tell an exactly opposite story, that being in the public domain actually increases the shelf life of literary work.
Right, at least as far as fiction works goes, this is what we're going to continue to find.
One of the great arguments against excessive extension of property rights is innovation will be suppressed if the status quo is afforded too much economic protection. Does that argument apply to literature?
One example of this, I've got a nice grant from Google to study the market for audiobooks. So one very simple thing we looked at was the most popular 20 books from 1913 to 22, all in the public domain. Not surprising, there's audiobook versions for all of them. If you look at the most popular 20 books from 1923 to 1932, all protected by copyright, only 16 of them have audiobook versions. So the ability to sort of make just a derivative work like an audiobook from an existing work seems clearly to be stifled by the length of copyright that we currently have in force.
The internet has obviously changed a lot of thinking about intellectual property. Would you care to make a prediction as to what Congress will do next to try to reckon more with current digital reality?
This current extension expires in 2018, so the lobbying will start up pretty soon to extend another 20 years. Now, there was no empirical research available to Congress in 1998. There is now. Whether that makes a difference or not, I don't know. Congress doesn't seem to care as much about academic research in this area as other countries. For example, England recently came out with what's called the Hargreaves Report, which basically says that the UK is not going to do any more tinkering with the Copyright Act in the absence of empirical research. American copyright owners failed to convince the Japanese Diet to extend copyright protection 20 years there because they weren't able to provide any sort of hard numbers suggesting that this would be a good thing for the Japanese people. So maybe Congress will take a cue from other legislatures around the world.
Yeah, of course they will. Congress cares deeply about scholarship and empirical evidence.
Sigh.
Well, Paul, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been great.
Paul Heald is a professor of law at the University of Illinois and professorial fellow at the Center for Intellectual Property Policy and Management at Bournemouth University.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.